While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM,
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners tuning in from across the globe. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Radar News Analysis, your trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and impact developments shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. And of course, it's Monday, the 3rd of November, 2025, and as we step into a brand new week and a new month as well, we continue doing what we do best, that is unpacking the stories that matter, from governance to grassroots, from policy to the people. Now, On The Radar News Analysis is your weekday guide to what matters most, bringing you the headlines from the headlines every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. Now, this isn't just another news show. On The Radar News Analysis is about depth and dialogue. It is where we interrogate the stories shaping our nation, ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots through archived audio, expert commentary, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to the everyday realities of Namibians, we bring you the full story with context, clarity, and credibility. Our interviews are long form and in-depth because some stories deserve more than just sound bites. Of course, you come prepared with research, background, and your questions to ensure every conversation brings us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath the surface. Now, remember, you can catch On The Radar live on all Eagle FM frequencies via the Eagle FM app or our Eagle FM website. And don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, exclusive interview clips, and behind-the-scenes content. So as we kick off this new week and step confidently into November, stay tuned, stay curious, and always step beyond the surface. This is On The Radar News Analysis, where Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. The Namibian government has set aside $663 million to cover registration and tuition fees for the first quarter of 2026 as part of a phased rollout of its new policy to make tertiary education at state institutions free. Finance Minister Erica Shafuda said in the 2025-2026 media budget review, the measures follows a State of the Nation announcement earlier this year by President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah that the government will subsidize 100% of registration and tuition at public universities and government vocational training centers from the 2026 academic year. Now, the mid-year budget review represents the $663 million as the allocation specifically intended to cover registration and tuition for January to March 2026, while the broader implementation is described by government as phased. The Education Ministry's mid-year figures form part of a larger $814 million Namibian dollar package proposed for the ministry in the review. Of that, $151 million Namibian dollars was separately earmarked for recruiting 665 new teachers. Now, the government communications indicate the policy applies to state-run tertiary institutions, Namibian public universities, and government vocational training centers. Media and official summaries identify the University of Namibia, the Namibia University of Science and Technology, and the vocational training centers under the Namibia Training Authority, that is NTA, among the intended beneficiaries. Now, the policy, as publicly described, waives registration and tuition fees. It does not automatically absorb other student costs as accommodation, food, travel, textbooks, or internet access. Now, the free tertiary announcement, free tuition announcement, was welcomed by many students and civil society groups as a landmark step toward wider access to higher education and a potential lever to reduce youth unemployment in a country with a very young population. However, student representatives and sector analysts have warned that the initial allocation may be insufficient to cover institutional needs and that the policy's benefits could be undermined without complementary support and and clear implementation plans. The Students' Union of Namibia raised the alarm that the government initial funding is insufficient, saying that the University of Namibia alone represents an additional 850 million Namibian dollars to meet operational and academic needs under the Free Education Plan. Substantially, more than 663 million Namibian dollars put forward for the rollout's initial phase. Now, of course, we have caught up with Simon Amonime to discuss on this important aspect and to get his sentiments on the matter, and of course his education as well, as he is part of the education sector. Let's now take a listen to Simon Amonime. A very good afternoon to you, Simon Amonime, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
No, greetings. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me, and greetings to the listeners.
Yeah. Simon, just not so long ago, of course, we understand that the government of Namibia has set aside 663 million Namibian dollars to cover registration and tuition fees for the first quarter of 2026. Just how do you understand this free education concept, Simon?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I think it's one of the plight of young people, that particularly student organizations, SRCs, and the broader youth community have been advocating for so many years that our government introduce free tertiary education so that our people can have access to tertiary education. Because in the past, what has been challenging is that we always believe that tertiary education has been commodified, and then we always ask and engage government to say that let them introduce free tertiary education, which the president has answered to that call. And we've seen in a solar speech and also the pronouncement that followed forth to say that they are going to indeed introduce free tertiary education come 2026, meaning it's going to be effective 2026. And now the medium term budget, you've seen that there's made an allocation of 663 million for the first quarter, which will cover the registration fee and tuition fee. That's from my own understanding. When we speak about free tertiary education, what does it entail? It entails that your tuition fee is covered as well as your registration fee, which has always been a blockage, because at this institution, you pay over 4,000 as registration fee at the beginning of the year, where you see parents are coming from holiday, it's the season to start the plowing and all those type of things, which have always been a blockage. As far as that is allowed to say, no registration fee, and students are able to enter university without being charged a fee, and also that your tuition fee is going to be fully covered. I think that defines when we speak about something that we are getting for free. I know there's an argument or there's speculations or concerns over whether we are going to have living expenses that are going to be covered. Looking at the model that has been in place, of course, from NSFAF, where they give you tuition fee as a loan, and they also give you a fund which you refer to as non-tuition for living expenses. So every student that's funded by NSFAF was usually allocated over 17,500 or 600 yearly. For your own upkeep, be it your rent, transport money, and stuff around like that. I think the lot of ambiguity is around that, to say, is this free education going to cover the living expenses? Of course, I'm well aware that there was a task force that was established that was working out that modality. And one can just say what we are certain about so far is that tuition fee is going to be covered. Non-tuition fee, we are not.
Let's pause here now with Simon Amonime. We'll be back shortly after this commercial break. Stay tuned.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impa? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Okay, and we resume. A very good afternoon to you, Simon Amunime, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Next year, I'm going to study at IUM.
Yes.
And just to emphasize that what is clear now is that registration money is for free, as well as tuition is for free. There is no yet clarity 100% to say that non-tuition fee is going to be abolished. What is not clear is whether this non-tuition fee is going to form part of free or is money that you are going to be required to pay back. Because your tuition fee, you are not going to pay back. Registration fee, you are not going to pay back, meaning you are schooling for free. But if government then establish and say, for your living expenses, we are going to give you 5,000 or 10,000 or 15,000 or 20,000, but this one will be required to pay back, that is yet to be established. Because the pronouncement that they made is that NASFAF is not going to be completely abolished. Mm-hmm. NASFAF is going to be integrated back into the line ministry, which is the Ministry of Education, and they are going to be the central point in terms of subsiding or subsiding this type of framework. So they are also going to have a role to play in terms of making sure also that that aspect of non-tuition fee students continue to benefit from. Because, you know, students live in the informal settlement, you come from the village and stuff around like that.
Mm-hmm.
So non-tuition fee is a very important component that you can't take away.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, if you just say you cover your tuition fee, but these students are hungry, they can't get to campus, they don't have data, they don't have a laptop, then we are wasting the money that we are giving in tuition fee. So, of course, it's just better to assume that there will be non-tuition fee, but what I'm concerned is that this non-tuition fee, is it going to be a grant or is it money that we are going to be required to pay back?
Mm.
Which is also the same for private institutions.
Yeah.
Because what you must also be able to explain is that the free tertiary education is only applicable to public university as well as public TVET, meaning the public VTCs, not the private institutions. Okay, but that does not now mean that the students that are studying in private institutions are not going to be funded by government. So government has a prerogative and they have jurisdiction to dictate what happens at the universities that they own, meaning government, this institution of UNAM and NAST belongs or are owned by government. But government does not own IUM, they don't own Welwitschia, they don't own Trafford College. So they can't dictate what should happen there. But they are legally bound to fund students that are enrolled at those private institutions. Meaning if I decide next year I'm going to study at IUM, I'm going to study at Trafford College, I should qualify for me to be funded my tuition fee at that particular institution. But what remains is that registration fee, you can't abolish it at private institution because you are going to make them collapse.
Mm.
You can dictate that at public entities because already UNAM and NAS get subsidy on an annual basis from central government. UNAM in the last financial year received over 900 million in subsidy. NAS received almost around 500 million in subsidy.
Yeah.
So they are already given this money in subsidy by government to run the operational costs and many other expenses, but private institutions don't receive that. They mainly depend on tuition fees and registration fees. That's why then you can impose and say there should also be free registration in private entities, because they might tell you that we have no money to pay our water, our electricity, and to pay our staff members. We don't get subsidy from government. But what I can say is that students that are studying in private institutions will also benefit from free education. Is just that they are going to be funded at those private entities.
Mm.
Now, Simon, of course, we often criticize what we don't understand. Back then, when announcement was made that NSFAF is going to be integrated into the line Ministry of Education, a lot of critics were obviously coming on, resurfacing or coming to the surface. But now that we see what is being rolled out or planned to be rolled out by the Ministry of Education and, of course, by the government as a role, as a whole, what is it that you have to see now that NSFAF is being integrated within the line ministry, I guess, to help also just to make the process quite smooth for everything else that has to go along that?
Yeah, I think there's a big lack of communication, of course, from the colleagues that are then tasked by the head of state. But, of course, also is that free education is effective next year. We should not also rush them, because this is comprised of stakeholders. The institutions of higher learning are represented there, various student representation, other important stakeholders in the education fraternity are part of it. NSFAF, the central government, the regulatory frameworks, the universities. So they've constituted that, and they will look at all the areas in terms of how the whole funding model should operate. Of course, we will wait on the framework, because of course, once there's no communication, there will always be vacuum for speculation and concerns and worries. Everyone is worried, do I qualify for funding next year? Will my institution be funded? Our qualification going to be funded? Or I say maybe at the specific priority field of study, if I'm studying HR, now going to be if I'm studying education. So people have all those type of concerns. Of course, because the framework is not yet released in terms of who qualify, but all we know is that you must qualify for admission at university.
Of course.
You cannot just come from your house, put on a backpack and say, no, it's free education, I'm going to school. Of course, it doesn't work like that. You must have an admission letter that you are accepted at a university that is accredited with our national bodies that are put in place, such as the National Council of Higher Education, the Namibian Qualification Authority, as well as the National Training Authority, the Namibian Training Authority, NTA, when you speak about the TVET or the VTC, those will always be requirements for you to be able to meet, for you to qualify for funding. It's not just something everyone just wake up and say. But the framework would be a better document, because it will say, okay, if I studied, for example, I was funded by NASA before, now I want to do my PhD, do I qualify? Do postgraduate qualify? Do master's qualify? Is it only at first degrees? So those are all areas that people are waiting for. So the sooner the document is released, the framework, the better, because it will serve as a guide to see in which category you fall into, who qualifies, who doesn't qualify for funding, what are the requirements and stuff around like that. And of course, it's now November, everyone is worried, but all I'll say, the framework that they're working on that is going to determine those modalities and the categories and how the whole free education is going to be implemented is the one that everyone is concerned about. And I hope the colleagues that are placed in charge are going to release it soon, so that we can really clarify some of those confusion or contradictions that we have now.
Yeah. Simon, of course, the midterm budget review has revealed that 814 million Namibian dollars is proposed for consideration to the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Yes, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture. And of that, 151 million Namibian dollars is for the recruitment of 665 teachers. Now, this, something came to my mind. I'm like, I'm wondering, usually per year, how many teachers are recruited by the Ministry of Education? Nonetheless, let's talk about the 665 teachers which are to be recruited next year. What is your take on this in terms of the figure itself?
Of course, I'll tell you it's maybe over 10,000 unemployed teachers.
Yeah.
It's something very serious. But also, what you must understand is that we must look at also in terms of the current whole basic education sector. Because if you check, Namibia has around, I think over 920 something learners. Those are learners now from grade 0 to grade 12. Over 900 and 20 something thousand.
Yeah.
This is the number of learners that they have in Namibia that are already in the schooling system.
Yeah.
So, in looking at the number of schools that they have, I think around 2,000 schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have around 2,000 schools and over 54, something around like that, learners. I just have to confirm the figures. So, now in terms of absorption, you also look in terms of that and say, okay, how many learners are we expected to have? Then you look at the ratio in terms of, say, how many teachers do we need to recruit for the next financial year? The teachers, there's an oversupply of teachers. Okay? The teachers, there's an oversupply of teachers. We have over 15,000 unemployed teachers. But if you look at the number of the learners that they have, as well as the number of schools that they have, if you are to make a decision that let's employ the 15,000 teachers today, those teachers will not have anywhere to go and teach.
Mm.
You just employ them so they can maybe sit there and get salaries. So the crisis there with teachers is in terms of we are training so many teachers, but the numbers of learners that they have, and also the school infrastructure, the classrooms or the schools that they have, are minimal compared to what we are producing.
Yeah.
So it's a crisis that we really have to handle. But looking at that 151 million that was allocated for the next financial year, at least to absorb the over 600 teachers,
mm-hmm.
I think it's small progress that we are making in terms of absorbing these teachers.
Yeah.
But we need a long-lasting solution to this teacher crisis. In terms of how we regulate the universities and say that let's have this supply of training of these educators, or let's find a way, or either, but as a country, must also not just be limited to our borders. We can also start things. We export, for example, teachers to our neighboring countries. You see, for example, in the health sector, we have doctors that are coming from Cuba. Cuba has over 23 medical schools, mm-hmm. and they produce doctors for the whole world.
Yeah.
So when it comes to human capital and training, we should also not just be limited that no, the schools that we have are few, and we cannot accommodate all the teachers that we have. So what happens? Let's also explore other areas and say, okay, are we able to send 1,000 teachers to Angola, for example?
Mm.
But what is going to happen there in Angola? People speak Portuguese. So, are we going to first teach them maybe 9 months or 6 months training in Portuguese as a language? Because with teaching, things are the same. It's just the medium of communication. So, it's just to start thinking also to say, okay, this is what is going to happen. Again, if we go in the private sector and say, okay, others must be absorbed by the private schools.
Yeah.
But also looking at the private school, the numbers of learners still remains the same. Whether you are in a private or public school, if you are only having 900,000 learners that qualify for schooling between grade 0 and grade 12, you can employ how many teachers or whatever, but if the learners are few, you'll find some schools closed down because the ratio, maybe the kids at that school are now just few, but the number of teachers that you have there, so then they start calling them uneconomical schools. Yeah. So it's an issue for me that needs a broad-based overview. And in terms of how we handle it, but of course the problem is that we have oversupply of teachers and everyone wants to be employed. So let's also explore modalities and other options than just employing those colleagues in our Namibian education system and see maybe we can introduce literacy and some deploy them into rural areas or maybe urban centers so they can assist in terms of lifelong learning and literacy program. That can be one.
Yeah.
Other options can be, for example, let's revise the old model, for example, for NAMCO, and say, okay, NAMCO usually they take these repeaters on a part-time basis.
Mm-hmm.
Can we have maybe NAMCO teaching these colleagues that are upgrading on a full-time basis. Then we have these teachers that are unemployed to go and teach people that are either repeating grade 11 or grade 12 on a full-time basis. Then again, we are faced with an issue of infrastructure. Where are you going to use the facility to teach them? Are you going to say after school is out, we then use the government facility or must NAMCO invest to building classrooms? So some are those aspects that we must look in terms of how do we resolve the situation. It's really a very bad situation looking at around 15,000 unemployed teachers, and we are only going to absorb over 665. Mm-hmm. So there's so many that will still be on the street, but how do we resolve that problem? And for me, it's not just a government problem. It needs a multifaceted approach from the training institutions themselves, from government, from other established entities that are there, and also from the public and the community, and say, how do we integrate and make sure that these people with the knowledge that they receive are really useful and they are going to use it? If you are saying are illiterate, Namibia's literacy rate is not so high, but we have teachers that are at home not doing anything.
Yes.
Let's try and find areas how we can utilize them so they can make a contribution.
Amanime, I do appreciate how you say that it's progress, small progress. At least there's some positivity in that, and make perhaps also room for improvement. And this also, I think, give time also for to see how the new government will actually roll all those things out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amanime, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
And with that, we pause here right now and go for a commercial break, but we'll be back shortly to engage still on this matter. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge ni wapuwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapenu mwe kutite okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho otike kovano ile oshuwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitiramo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa minuto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okuni ushendife nawa nukumuna oijewele nawa ninge Pada fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora itatimwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, ona filane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we're joined in studio telephonically by Bernard Kavahu. Ben Kavahu is the board chairperson for the Students' Union of Namibia. A very good afternoon to you, Kavahu, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon to all Namibians. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Kavahu, we're talking about free tertiary education as the government of Namibia has now intended to roll out, especially for the first quarter of 2026. Kavahu, just what is your take first and foremost on this? And of course, with recent pronunciation by the president to say this only covers a tuition fee and registration fee.
Yes. Firstly, we should say that we are part of the founding members of Student Revolution that have advocated for free quality tertiary education. Now, in our advocates of free quality tertiary education, the basis was that all Namibian students should benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it has come to our surprise that when it was announced during the SONA, the president was said loud and clear where she stated that free education only applies to public institutions. That became a shock to us, and we started to be more worried. We were saying that this is not what we've advocated for. She went further to say a committee will be appointed to look at the modality, the operational basis. Now, as a student leader, you begin to wonder to say, how do you announce a policy directive when you don't have a working document as to how it will operate? That already gave us a signal to say probably it was a political excitement. Nevertheless, this is the bone of contention where we strongly feel that we are not against free education, but there are three things that we don't agree with. One, firstly, is the exclusion of non-tuition fee. Because the president said the parents has to come in and meet the government halfway.
Yeah.
We know very well that non-tuition fee is what assists students at tertiary institution. Non-tuition fee is much more higher compared to the living expenses at basic education. Let me give you an example. Just for you to study at UNAM in the hostel, you need 17,000 and above for your accommodation, including for you to buy a laptop, for you to have meals. Now, once you cut out this, what it basically means that children of the cleaners, children of the police officers, children of the farmers, children of the liberation struggle icons who did not yet get the benefit from the government will be excluded to have those to tertiary institutions. Now, that's when we say that, look, a monarch cannot only be accommodation for the elites, for the politicians, because they have money, for the capitalist. We need to balance it. Non-tuition fee is an important component for Namibian students.
Yeah.
So having tuition alone does not solve the whole problem of education. Because what it basically means, learners who are coming from Kachina Kachi will not reach their dream of studying in Windhoek. Because here accommodation is expensive, the rent control bill is not yet enacted. So that is one of the problems that we have. Now, another problem we have is, if you are saying it's an inclusive education, what about a Namibian student who wish to study at Stellenbosch? Someone who wish to study in Germany? Why must I not be funded if I'm equally Namibian? Why only students that are studying at Nasi UNAM and public VTC? What crime has I committed as a Namibian? Just because I have better points, I'm going to study abroad. Now my hands must be cut out. I must not benefit from the cake of our country.
Why are is that feasible in terms of funding for those who are going to study abroad? Because I know it entails more costs compared to obviously studying within the sector or within the borders of Namibia. Is that something that you think perhaps is feasible, or perhaps we need to roll out with what perhaps the government can be able to do now?
No, it's doable. NSF has managed to fund students that are studying abroad, and we didn't see anything wrong with that. As long as the criteria are met, the institution is recognized, it's accredited, what is wrong with that? We are advocating for globalization. We are advocating for Africa free trade. Why are we advocating for these things if we have to promote localized education? So for me, let the students study wherever they wish to study. Let them gain the knowledge. And I believe not all the courses are present here in Namibia. So let students go get the knowledge outside so that it can be the benefit of our country. Money is there. It's possible. The only thing is, let's consolidate our minds together. Let's put the money and fund the right candidate rather than selective funding model.
Okay. Kamau, you spoke also about how the rollout is obviously for just for public institutions and TVET institutions. But then again, private sectors or private institutions, private educational institutions are not subsidized by the government. What is your take on this in having to perhaps or in trying to pull this over to have this rollout over to private institutions, and how exactly do you think the government would need to go about that?
Good. One thing that we need to understand is that our government has always subsidized public institutions. There's nothing new which is coming. And we know there's no way government can subsidize private institution at higher education because it's too costly. But we have seen government subsidizing private schools at basic education. That is a debate of another day. However, what we are saying is that the person who's at the center is a Namibian child. Let a Namibian child be funded. Let the Namibian child tuition fee be paid. Let the Namibian child get non-tuition fee, regardless of the institution of their choice, whether it's public or private. Now, another problem we have is our public institutions do not have capacity. They will not be able to accommodate everyone. So the matter of the fact that they don't have capacity, so what happens now when UNAM says we are only taking, for example, 100 medicine students? What happens to the 1,000 Namibians? While the other institutions have capacity, so let them go study there. Or are we saying we are doubting this private institution? Which I think is a wrong scenario because number one, all these institutions of higher learning, especially private, they are registered by the National Council of Higher Education. For them to be registered, that means they've met the standard. Secondly, the qualifications they are offering are all accredited by the National Namibian Quality Assurance. So, or are we doubting the institutions that regulate quality? If that is the case, that is what we must do now. We must do our checks at what can we do to improve our NCHE, to improve our NQA. But if the standard is there, now what is the problem? Why can't a student study there and let the student be funded? That's what we are saying. So the point is, let's not be mistaken. It's a Namibian student who's being funded tuition, and let them study at the institution of their choice.
Mm-hmm. But I understand that's the reason why NSFAF is not abolished and rather integrated into the Ministry of Education, so as to cater for those students who will be attending at private institutions, not so?
No, the question is, what triggered the discrimination? NSFAF has always been there. That's what they've been doing. So what is that that have really come out? What is the difference there? Then why are we talking about it? That's what we are asking. And also, if that is it, why can't the policymaker come out clearly to say, yes, students that are studying abroad, those are studying at a private institution, you'll be catered by NSFAF. I haven't read anything like that. Why is it a secret? Or is it still being discussed, hidden somewhere? And remember, we are on the 11th month. It's causing panic to the students now. Next month is already December. How does institutions even plan for next year? How does a student even plan where they're going to study next year if clarity is not given until today? This should be a public concern, and anyone who's sitting on this decision-making must be reminded that they are affecting students mentally. And it's a serious concern to us as a student union. Mm-hmm. We want someone to come out clearly to say, look, this is how students that are studying where we will be funded. We want someone to come out clearly how much the non-tuition fee will be. We want someone to come out clearly if it's registration fee. Is it only registration fee? Because now things are changing. We've read from the media. So apparently free education will only talk about registration fee and tuition fee. Mm-hmm. And it's not even clear to the institution of higher learning, even for you now. Will there be criteria of how these people, or people will just apply as long as you are taken into an institution, everyone will be funded. And who will be looking at this criteria? Is it now the institutions or will it be NSFAF? So this confusion needs to be cleared rather than just giving political statements or policy guidance that are not clear. That's where we have a concern. And also the matter of fact to us, NSFAF has been doing very well.
Yeah. Pardon me, Kavau. Just let's just make room for a scheduled commercial break quickly. When we do return, no problem. I'll allow you to share your sentiments.
Thank you.
Okay, just stay on the line.
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get 4 kg Cadilla mixed chicken for $189.99. 1 kg Pasta Grande Spaghetti for $19.99. 750 gram Nola Mayo for just $37.99. And 2 kg Sunlight Hand Wash Powder for only $52.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Okay, Kavau, we are back now. You were saying?
Yes, I'm saying that someone need to come out and come publicly to say what's really going to happen.
Yeah.
Already, ULAM was already indicating that even the 613 million is not even enough to cover what ULAM requires. I've also read that ULAM need to upgrade their capacity and so. We only have 2 months before we are in a new year, before new academic year will start. So when are we going to get ready? That should be one of the things that everyone should be worried about. Now, I want to look at the constitutional and legal foundation. In our understanding, we feel that Article 20, which speaks about the right to education, it says that every person has the right to education. This does not say only when you study at public institution. So, by restricting free education to benefit only public university, the state risks violating the principle of equality before the law. That's also supported by Article 10. So I don't know what are we doing. And you can go further where it says that the state's obligation is to promote fundamental rights and freedom. That's in Article 20 at Article 5 of the Namibian Constitution. Now, also, well, that's why I said that the NSF model has always been the best. If they integrate it even in the ministry, it's fine. Now, what does the Act 26 of 2000 say about NSF? Mm-hmm. It says that NSF will be established to fund or to provide financial assistance to students to enable them to pursue higher education. So the Act does not restrict such assistance only to public institutions.
Yeah.
So any administrative policy that excludes private or foreign-based registered Namibian students is therefore inconsistent with both the spirit and the letter of the Act of NSF. Now, lastly, when we look at Vision 2030 at the National Development Plans,
mm-hmm.
Namibia Vision 2030 visions is based on knowledge-based economy driven by skilled citizens across all sectors. To achieve this, education must be inclusive and accessible wherever the Namibian student has to study. So we believe that education is a national investment, not a public institution privilege. Now, I also feel that some people, you were asking me an important question where you were saying,
yeah,
is this visible? Can everyone be funded?
Mm.
I want us to look at the model. I only chose 3 models which works best. Let's look at the model of Botswana. The government of Botswana offers sponsorship and grants covering tuition and living expenses for students that are studying at local tertiary institution and public institution, as well as local private tertiary institutions, as long as they are accredited. It's working very well. We can all go and read about it. No one has complained. Now, since we are globalized, let's look at a country like Norway. Norway offers tuition and non-tuition or living expenses to students, even those that are studying either private or public or those that are studying outside. I don't see the picture as to why Namibian students must be discriminated because they've chosen where they have to study.
Okay.
If there's something maybe which is not working, the government must be able to tell us.
Mm.
That is the point that we are saying. And students are traumatized as we are speaking. They don't know about their future, especially those who are already in the system. But luckily, to remove that fear from them, as a responsible union where we engaged with NSF, where they are saying the students with existing contracts theirs will continue until their contract lapses. But what about the future students now starting next year? So those are mostly of our worries. Look at the Botswana style of funding. Look at Norway. You can also look at Mauritius.
Yeah.
And their education is going well, flexible, everyone's benefiting. Because at the end of the day, when a student graduates, they will contribute equally to the economy of this country. They will not ask, you studied at a private institution, so we are reducing your tax. You studied at a public institution, we are increasing your tax. In fact, all the qualifications have the same level. They will receive the same salary. So what is the rush of us discriminating this Namibian student? The key point is the child of a cleaner must have access to education. The child of a police officer must have access to education, affordable accommodation, affordable transport, not to be discriminated based on where they are studying.
Kavau, I do appreciate you sharing your sentiments with us. And I think I take away one point to say, yes, we are in the 11th month. And of course, perhaps the person who is sitting on the information should be reminded to roll them out. Only then, I think when everything has been put on the table, then we can be very clear and know exactly the direction we are going. But thank you so much for making time for us right here.
Thank you very much for having us. Let the message spread. And we appreciate the media for having this important information. The public needs it. The government needs it. We will build this nation together. Thank you.
Okay.
We will build this nation together. Thank you.
Hello?
On the reader, news analysis. Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Mm-hmm. Regarding free education.
Yes.
Can I contribute?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, on free education, actually, I think we are human beings. We all understand they say a human, wherever there is a human being, you can give whatever way. If you give a human being complaints, if you don't give them, they'll still complain. Understand?
Yeah.
So it's normal. It's nature. Yes. Yeah. In as much as people are saying, we are saying, all of us, yes, let all of us be included.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way I understood it was,
yeah,
irregardless of whatever this free education we are debating about, the government have been providing most of it, initially. Then most of us, we have benefited from
NSWAP.
Is it NSWAP? Eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, most of us, we benefited from there. And I don't know if government have never provided that before. Now, we are coming up with this. Now, UNAM wants this budget. Mm-hmm. What is it that we really want? Do we want to eat or we want to advance the development of the country?
Yeah.
What went wrong? What is going wrong here? When the initially, NASOF has been funding, the only thing they said, let's remove the management of NASOF and let's put the under one umbrella, whereby the money that was utilized to pay salaries contributes to the education of the Namibian child, is not so?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then when you come about, you say, okay, those who are studying outside the country, the government says, we start within. We are not saying
exactly
we are not going to be included.
I hear you.
You cannot start feeding other people outside instead of feeding yourself first.
Or you cannot take on a bigger chunk when you have not really test drive, yes, how far you can go.
Definitely.
Mm.
Now, if that's the case, what the government is saying, let's start internally. What we find when we give UNAM the money or whichever institution which is within Namibia, the money stays within Namibia. You get my mind?
Yes.
If we take the money out of Namibia and we start funding Europeans, what are we doing now? Which economy are we growing? Eh?
Mm-hmm.
They are saying, yes, when you fund Namibians, those parents who have got kids who are studying in Namibia, within Namibia, they will benefit. You see? So they used to pay for their children. Now they will be able to do more with that money they were paying. Let's say, for example, you were building a house. And now, every now and then, maybe you could not continue because you have to go borrow money from the bank. Now, that's more money which comes back into your pocket. It will be able to do something for your development of your life, your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if the way they are saying it, there's no discrimination. Yes, I don't think the government said, I'm not so sure, but I don't think they said those who were studying out the way they were funded when this registration comes into being, they won't be funded that way. I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
If they will be stopped, no. Yeah. But for us to demand that free accommodation, free everything, sometimes let us be human.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's accommodate each other. Let's say if the government is going to fund for a tuition.
Yeah.
Now, in the term of tuition, if you were supposed to fund accommodation also, you would have limit the number of the students who should be funded. But if you don't fund accommodation, because then they say, no, parents must see for themselves or in terms of accommodation, air tickets.
Yeah.
Sort yourselves out.
Mm-hmm.
So that every Namibian, when we are funding tuition, we fund tuition, that's all.
Yes.
So no one will say, no.
Which you don't have, which you won't even have to pay back 4 years after when you finish.
Yes. Yes. So then no one will come and say, no, you gave the other one with accommodation, the other group, you never gave them accommodation. I think I heard the president properly said, no. I think the president says, we are, Namibia, we are willing to fund, we are going to start funding tuition. Parents bear with us.
Yes.
For accommodation.
I hear that as well.
And that's what I heard. I'm not so sure how other people were here listening.
It should be a two-way street now. Parents, yes. Do your part, I do my part, or we do our part, you know?
We do our part, mm-hmm. Yes. So, which means, even if that's where they were, maybe they do not have access to government funding, they might get that funding now.
Yes.
Listen. So then we are catering for everybody. Let's not be selfish. This selfishness in this country, it has gone on to the point that there must be a separation between who and the who, the haves and the don't haves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what we always look at, because we want to show that this we are better than the other.
Mm.
But the same way the other scholar was saying, the son of a police officer, the son of a cleaner, the son of a CEO,
mm-hmm.
The CEO contributes to tax.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's taxpayers' money. We all contribute. So we all ought to get the same treatment, fair treatment.
Yeah.
And that's what the government is trying to do here.
Mm.
They don't want to say no. That's why you see, people must understand the purpose of uniform in schools. Uniform was to make sure you don't show that who is poor and who is rich.
Yes.
Yes. That's the purpose and primary objective of a uniform.
I hear you.
So that's what the government wants to do now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not start trying to look at, UNAM says the budget. What budget? What were they feeding themselves before?
Good question. Who am I speaking to?
No, you're speaking to James.
James from where?
Irogen, from, I don't know which from.
Are you from Moshakati?
From Zambezi region, but I'm currently in Windhoek.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but look, let us be honest here.
Yeah.
Let's not try to bring in, the problem is, we have got people who are selfish.
Yeah.
And those are the ones who are coming with no budget, planning, what. They don't have even a plan for themselves. Go ask them, what are your plans in the coming 5 years?
Yeah.
They complain, but they never even contribute to the development of the country.
Mm, I hear you, James.
The government is contributing to the development of each and every child. There were people who were isolated, let us be honest. You see?
Yes.
Some people could not afford, because their tuition, you see, registration is 4,000.
Mm.
How will a cleaner afford 4,000 in January?
Mm.
Or February.
Even if they've been saving up, you can see that we are coming from December and there's so many expenses, but yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the same people, the same lecturers, the same, look, for me, I think we have to come up with the policy that says whoever is going against government is treasonous. Because when the idea is a good idea for the government of the country.
Yeah.
We have got these people who want to set us back, because maybe they were sent. We don't know.
James, because I hear you.
You can't come up with budgets now. People are telling you, this money has been going in since time in memorial. Let us be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have benefited from that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing new.
Exactly.
The only thing they are doing is let's expand it.
Yeah.
And let's remove this deposit of 4,000, 6,000. at the beginning of the year, because they are parents.
James, I would really appreciate to engage further, but no, we have a schedule commercial break coming up. Yeah. Make sure you do call in via our office number. The number that you called now, just add the zero so I can get your contact details, okay?
All right.
James, thank you so much.
Add the zero. All right, thank you.
Okay, bye. Let's make it.
Goeie nuus, Imbad nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imbad te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Get the best for less at USave. 2 kilograms Omaeta cultured milk, just $48.99. 2 liters of Rietfontein nectar juice, just $34.99. 500 grams of King Paloni, just $24.99. Knorr packet soup, $30 for any 5. That's just $6 each. Take a break with Nestle Kit Kat chocolates, just $10.99. And a 2 liter Co-Eco drink, only $12.99. USave, your low budget grocery store. With good food costs less.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa, where the Parliament of South Africa has relaunched South Africa's TB Congress in order to combat deadly disease. Let's take a listen.
The relaunch of the SATB Caucus is a recommitment to shine the light on a curable disease.
We are reforming it again and asking members of parliament, this time around, please don't let it disappear. You are aware that we have launched an NTB campaign where we must test 5 million people for tuberculosis annually, test them and put them on treatment every year. This is a mammoth of a task.
Parliament is at the forefront of this drive.
It is a powerful moment. A renewed commitment to end the one of the oldest and deadliest diseases, which is tuberculosis. This relaunch is a call of action. It affirms that Parliament will not stand by while TB continues to claim lives every single day.
And the partners of the caucus are confident that this renewed focus will assist to bring an end to the TB epidemic by 2030.
The establishment and strengthening of the South African TB Caucus is a critical step in mobilization of the political will that is required to meet the national and global targets to end TB.
The department, together with the National Institute for Communicable Diseases and National Health Laboratory Services, we launched what we call near live TB public facing dashboard. That dashboard is going to help you. All these 5 million people who are going to be tested will be able to follow up. We'll be able to know whose gender was tested that day, in what village, how many people tested, and in terms of age groups.
Zaline Merrington, SABC News, Parliament.
Let's now hear in regards to a volatile week on the market amid cooling a gold rush.
Morning to Morning Live viewers. My name is Tepo Mawai. This segment is called Bottom Line. After U.S. rate decision last week and the much-anticipated meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping, markets are now looking for the next catalyst. Now, let's take a look at the JSE performance for the week that was. Well, for the whole week, the JSE All Share Index closed in the red on 3 out of 5 trading sessions. Let's zoom in on that volatility that we saw last week. Well, on Wednesday, the All Share Index jumped to an intraday high above 111,000 points. Resources and mining stocks were major drivers fueled by high global commodity prices. Unfortunately, we are now seeing some moderation in prices. The end of the week also saw foreign investors being net sellers of the South African equities for the sixth consecutive day. And most of this money is in gold and resources. Let's take a look at that gold price. Well, the yellow metal price for the past 4 weeks, it rose to an all-time high, and it's still at $4,300 per ounce, which is the record high. The price first broke above the $4,000 mark in early October, driven by a surge in safe haven demand due to global geopolitical uncertainties. The price has been coming down from its peak, and so is our overall performance on the JSE. It is, however, back above that $4,000 an ounce level, a sign that major institutions have maintained a substantial holding in gold. It seems like that sentiment is slowly shifting in favor of the U.S. markets. If anything, to judge by giving the last performance that we've seen last week. Now, let's take a look at the Wall Street. U.S. stocks were stronger, driven by positive big tech earnings. The U.S. stock market generally had a strong performance, with major indices closing the week with solid gains boosted by better-than-expected earnings from Amazon. Now shifting our focus on some of the key local economic data out this week. The health of the manufacturing sector will come under the spotlight this week with the release of the Absa Manufacturing Index. FinTech Group of Asia initial public offering takes place tomorrow on the JSE. We also have financial numbers out from SAPI. To end the week, the South African Reserve Bank will publish its gross foreign exchange reserve numbers for the month of October. That's how we end the show, the segment this morning.
In other news, the government of South Africa plans a 440 billion rand transmission expansion.
At an engagement with construction and manufacturing stakeholders in Sandton, Minister Ramakgopa emphasized that the country's energy and electricity ambitions rely heavily on the rapid development of transmission infrastructure. He says the transmission development plan will need to be revised in the context of the recently approved integrated resource plan. The minister says coal continues to provide reliable baseload capacity. However, renewables are expected to provide additional capacity to support economic growth.
You have seen that the projects in seven provinces, there will be rain again in the Northern Cape. Now you are going to have electricity because of coal. I'm not diplomatic. I think our encounter with the truth is a minimum requirement for us solving the problem. So familiarity with the truth is important. You might not like coal. You're going to bribe cook, and that's coal. So I'm just saying this. The sooner we accept that is important. But does that mean we must relinquish this? No. Because the reason why we're building this program is because we want renewables. We want them to be in place. Otherwise, we will not be building 14,000 kilometers of new lines, because the existing lines are sufficient to draw from the installed capacity. So when you compute what is the cost of renewables, we must factor in the 440 billion rand of investment in transmission. Then you get to the true cost of renewables.
According to the 2025 Integrated Resource Plan, the country should have 11 gigawatts of solar PV, 7 gigawatts of wind, 6 gigawatts of gas, and 5.2 gigawatts of nuclear energy capacity added to the grid by 2039. Ramakgopa says the transmission project will be key in the grid expansion strategy. He says local industry stands ready to participate and benefit from the built project.
We take a dim view of those who want to undermine our transformation objectives, an exceptionally dim view. And I was saying that given the lessons from the IPP program, I think we're going to correct that situation. And then the issues of demographics, I think ensuring that we are able to create skills. I mean, once there is a downstream intervention in relation to localization and all of that, the secondary sector of the economy, manufacturing, we're bolstering that. I mean, if you come to think of it, it's much better paying jobs, better skills. You are able to build the middle class and therefore bolster household consumption, which makes 60% of GDP. So it's an important part of the equation.
And Minister Ramakgopa has emphasized that South Africa's energy ambitions are not only inward-looking, hence the Transmission Development Plan will seek to expand into the region. He says the transmission project aligns with the 7th Democratic Administration's ambitions to grow the economy and to create jobs. Naledi Ngcobo, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Let's move on to Tanzania, where Tanzania's opposition has rejected the president's win in vote marred by protests.
Tanzania's opposition party has rejected President Samia Suluhu Hassan's landslide victory in elections this week that were marred by deadly protests. Accepting the winner's certificate in Dodoma on Saturday, Hassan criticized the demonstrators, describing them as unpatriotic. This election was a test to not only the popularity of manifestos and the development agenda of political parties, but also to the maturity of the nation's democracy. This victory does not belong to one candidate or party. It's our collective victory as Tanzanians. Witnesses say police fired tear gas and shot at demonstrators, angry at the exclusion of Hassan's two main challengers in the election. There are widely varying reports of the number of deaths, with the opposition saying hundreds and the UN saying at least 10 people died. We thank the security apparatus for ensuring that all the chaos witnessed did not alter or stop the election process. The incidents experienced, especially around cities like Dar es Salaam, Arusha, Mwanza, Mbeya and Songwe, were unacceptable, uncivilized and unpatriotic. Patriots build their countries and not destroy what their fellow countrymen built with blood and sweat. The government strongly condemns these recent events. The government has dismissed the opposition's tally of the deaths as hugely exaggerated and rejected criticism of its human rights record. Opposition party Chadema, which was barred from the election, says the demonstrations are proof that Tanzanians reject the outcome of the flawed poll.
Meanwhile, Rwanda embraces AI in order to build smart cities.
It's fast becoming a model for data-driven development in Africa. The capital, Kigali, is at the heart of the effort to become smarter, better connected and more efficient. But there are other cities too. From the so-called digital twins that simulate city growth before a single brick is laid, to AI systems that track land use, traffic and even sanitation. Officials say Rwanda's smart city journey is powered by data and innovation to shape lifestyle.
Different countries define smart cities as relevant to them. So what we've defined for ourselves, because we have to start with the definition before we talk about what it looks like for Rwanda, right? So for us, it's how do we use technology, innovation, and data to improve urban planning, to improve convenience for citizens, to improve really your life when you're moving around the city, everything shifts around lifestyle.
Everything we're doing is not just becoming smart, but it's to ensure that the citizens in Kigali, the people who are visiting Kigali, the tourists, the investors and any other people are really have an easy life in what they are doing and what they're planning to do. So we were really people-centered.
In Rwanda, artificial intelligence is being deployed in key areas from health sector, energy efficiency and water systems to waste management, transport optimization and urban planning. The city of Kigali is using satellite imagery and drones to detect dirty streets, water pipes and power faults, track urban growth and fight illegal construction, while smart streetlights and AI traffic systems help reduce congestion. Regulators say it saves resources and ensures safety for citizens.
We have started using the satellite imagery, but as well as the drone to ensure that we inspect the cleanliness in Kigali. If some areas are becoming a bit dirty, we can send a team to inspect on that, or we can even talk to the local team to ensure that the specific places are cleaned in a timely manner. So I can say that City of Kigali is really doing its best to ensure that we leverage on the opportunities that we are given by technology.
The government is extending these innovations to secondary cities like Musanze, Huye and Rubavu, ensuring balanced growth and inclusive development across the country.
The idea is that the smart city vision is national. It's not based on the city of Kigali alone. The city of Kigali is more advanced. However, there is a plan to stretch that to the other secondary cities and eventually to town and village level.
According to officials, by combining artificial intelligence with GIS, IoT and big data, Rwanda is laying the foundation for its Vision 2050, cities that are livable, resilient, and sustainable.
Here in Kigali's Cafe Zone, one of the most vibrant public spaces, people are working, studying, and connecting through free public Wi-Fi. It's a simple yet a powerful example on how smart city initiatives can help people get connected, informed, and included. Eitan Tashibyafu, CGTN, Kigali, Rwanda.
We spoke to Oscar Okumo, who...
Meanwhile, landslide in Kenya's Rift Valley claims 21 lives and leaves 30 people missing.
He is the head of region in the North Rift for Kenya's Red Cross Society. About the latest rescue operations, let's take a listen.
This situation is a landslide situation that was facilitated by the continuous rains in the area. And we have a number of effects that have happened, including displacements of population. We also have people who are injured. And of course, unfortunately, we have people who have lost their lives to this situation, and we have people who are missing. So based on the data given to us by the government, we are having about 29 people still missing. And the search and rescue team is on ground trying to do the same, to just ensure that we get these people, we rescue them if they are alive and recover if the bodies have succumbed to the situation. Again, on the other hand, we have people who have lost their lives. The government will give those figures. And we have people who have been injured and have been evacuated from the site, which is Elgeyo Marakwet, to Eldoret for further treatment. And as we are speaking at this moment, we are looking at a situation that is likely to affect more places because the days is not only in Elgeyo Marakwet County. So we have other counties that are being affected, which is West Pokot. We have Baringo County, which are neighboring Elgeyo Marakwet County on the borders along this particular area. And these counties, we are doing what is called risk communication and community engagement, whereby we are communicating with the community members to move to safer grounds, and again, communicating with those who are doing farming on higher lands to stop that and do alternative farming methods that would then be able to conserve the soil and avoid these movements. The conditions are still active, and actually, the previous night, it was recorded that there was still a landslide, that some earth movement that took place. However, it's fortunate that it didn't harm anyone. It didn't move along places that were having residents. In as much as they are doing the search and rescue, the mountain is still making sounds, meaning there's still a lot of movement of earth uphill. So then the advice is basically that we move to safer grounds because the situation is still very active. The rains are still here with us. The soil is still becoming flaccid and saturated. Thus, it's still able to move, and thus the risk communication committed with the military members. We have West Pokot County that borders Elgeyo Marakwet, and to this center, it's the immediate border that we are having. And West Pokot County also experiences such, but then not in the largest magnitude like we have witnessed for Elgeyo Marakwet. However, we are still extending our services to these counties, the neighboring counties, to inform the communities of the need to move to safer grounds and to be safe, and also to consider better farming mechanisms and methods that would then not make them prone to landslides.
Meanwhile, the Nigerian president has denied Trump's claims of Christian persecution amid military threat.
In West Africa, Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu has rejected accusations by U.S. President Donald Trump that Christians in the country are being persecuted and murdered by terrorists. Tinubu says his country is committed to safeguarding religious freedom and has been working to ensure the safety of people of all faiths. Nigeria's foreign ministry also released a statement reiterating the country's resolve to combat violent extremism and expressed hopes that Washington would continue to be a close ally. Trump had said in a post on his Truth social media warned that the U.S. military would strike targets in Nigeria if the government does not address the concerns he raised. He has instructed the Defense Department to prepare for potential rapid military action against Nigeria if the government fails to address the killing of Christians. He has also warned that the U.S. would immediately suspend all aid and assistance to Nigeria. Well, let's bring in our correspondent, Deji Bademosi, who is in Lagos for us. Deji, welcome to the program. Thank you for taking time out to speak to us. Deji, statements flying back and forth after the Trump threat. How have Nigerians reacted to all these statements and developments, Deji?
Well, Richard, the reaction, of course, has been overwhelming. Nigerians reacting from across the country. The majority of them, of course, not in support of what the President of the United States has said and the action that the United States government has decided to, threaten to take now. Many Nigerians here would tell you that it's not true that Christians have been persecuted in the country. Of course, there were challenges. There are insecurity challenges in the country. The president said that much in his reply to the U.S. president. And, of course, the statement issued by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs also contained that as well, that, look, there are security challenges, but there's just no way in this country that anybody of any religious inclination now is being targeted. Of course, we've had attacks in places where, you know, the majority of residents there are Christians, especially in the north central of the country. But the motivation for those attacks is hardly religious. The motivation is actually, land grabbing, if you like. And this problem has been there for a long time. So that is the reason why the Nigerian government has come out to say, look, the characterization of this conflict or violence, if you like, as religious is actually not correct. And what the government is trying to do is to make the USC, to see reason and to really understand the nature of the conflict it is battling. And of course, the government has said it is doing everything, and there's no doubt at all. The military has actually been doing all it can to, especially in recent times, it's made strong gains now against insurgents and bandits, really decimating them. Overall, Nigerians are not in support of any kind of invasion now, as threatened by the U.S. government. And of course, the government is taking this very seriously, especially when it comes to the issue of that threat to seize all aid and assistance to the country. Because should that happen, that would no doubt have enormous impact, especially in Nigeria's fight now against insurgency and banditry. Because, you know, Nigeria has been getting enormous support, security support now from the United States. And at this time, it just would need that support to ensure that it sustains its fight now against insurgency and banditry. So should the U.S. now decide to go ahead or make good that threat now and seize all this aid and assistance, it no doubt would affect the country in a very, very bad way. Richard?
Well, Deji, let's continue to unpack that subject matter of support and aid. Now, let me start by asking you again, how seriously is Nigeria and Nigerians taking these threats by Trump, especially on the cutting of U.S. foreign aid and possible military action? Is there cause for concern here?
Yes, of course. I mean, Nigeria is taking this very seriously. And it's the reason why, you know, after the Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a statement, the president had to issue another statement he's personally signed. I mean, it gives you a sense of how serious the government is taking this. And Nigerians are also taking this very seriously. I mean, looking at the antecedents of President Donald Trump. The Nigerian government is taking this very seriously. As I said, security aid has been from the United States now has been quite pivotal for Nigeria. Not long ago, Nigeria got quite a number of military equipment from the U.S. I mean, bought now, not received. They are getting it for free. You talk about Super Tucano jets that we got under the presidency of, that's the first term of President Trump. And there are quite a number of military assistance that the country has received. I mean, with the assistance of the U.S., the Nigerian government is able to purchase military equipment now from even all the buyers internationally. So the government is taking this very seriously, and people are really concerned. And that's the reason why there are quite a number of people who are saying, look, the government should do more in terms of talking with the U.S. government and trying to make the U.S. government and the U.S. president understand the nature of the kind of conflict that Nigeria is dealing with so that, you know, nothing happens. I mean, there's no question at all, Richard, that should the U.S. go ahead with this threat, it will definitely impact Nigeria's fight against insurgency, in as I said, in a very bad way. Richard?
All right. Deji Bademosi in Lagos, thanks for that. In West Africa, Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu has rejected accusations by U.S. President Donald Trump that Christians in the country are being persecuted and murdered by terrorists. Tinubu says his country is committed to safeguarding religious freedom and has been working to ensure the safety of people of all faiths. Nigeria's foreign ministry also released a statement reiterating the country's resolve to combat violent extremism and expressed hopes that Washington would continue to be a close ally.
Nigeria said on Sunday it would welcome U.S. help fighting Islamist insurgents, but only if its territorial integrity is respected. The comments came after Trump said he'd asked the Pentagon to prepare for fast military action if the country didn't crack down on religious violence. Then on Sunday, he confirmed to reporters that he was considering intervention.
They're killing record numbers of Christians in Nigeria. And they have other countries very bad also. You know that. That part of the world very bad. They're killing the Christians and killing them in very large numbers.
Nigeria denies all claims of Christian persecution. Speaking in Washington, Presidential Advisor Daniel Bwala said outdated reports were being misused. But he said the situation was an opportunity to engage the U.S. in finding common ground.
The report or notion that there is a Christian persecution or genocide in Nigeria is false. We are willing, anytime, any day. I personally have a feeling that in the next couple of days, they are going to have a sit down together, and then we will find a common front in this fight against insecurity.
Nigeria has faced deadly attacks from Islamist insurgents like Boko Haram and Islamic State West Africa for over 15 years, with most violence concentrated in the Muslim-majority Northeast. The country is split between a largely Muslim North and a mostly Christian South. While Christians have been targeted, analysts say most victims of extremist violence have been Muslims. Crisis Monitoring Group ACLED says that out of nearly 2,000 attacks on civilians in Nigeria this year, the number targeting Christians because of their religion stood at 50. Claims by some U.S. right-wing groups that as many as 100,000 Christians have been killed in Nigeria since 2009 are not supported by available data. John Joseph Hayab is the Northern Nigeria chairman of the country's Christian Association. He supports U.S. intervention over religious violence, but said he opposed any foreign influence on the country's leadership.
What some of us will not support is anybody deciding who should be our leader. It's purely a Nigerian thing. But if they are reminding us that what is accepted in our constitution, what is acceptable in other standards, we should do it.
Trump's threat of military action came a day after his administration added Nigeria back to a list of nations that the U.S. says have violated religious freedoms. Experts warn that U.S. strikes in Nigeria would be difficult to execute, as militant groups operate across vast, porous borders.
Meanwhile, tensions are high in Belgrade amid protests over fatal roof collapse.
Emotions are mixed. I've seen a lot of my acquaintances, and that invokes nice, friendly emotions. And on the other hand, there are bad emotions. Emotions of anger when we see that crime is being promoted in this country under the protection of the regime, and that peaceful protesters are being attacked.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reading News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loise Shimi. Thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30, and then the Business Economic segment from 1800 hours with me, yours truly, Ndafa Happy Juju. With that being said, goodbye and have yourself a wonderful afternoon ahead.